Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Anna Sale, in for Brian Lehr, and now the first installment in our Oscar documentary series, where we're talking about this year's Oscar-nominated feature-length documentaries. First up is Cutie and the Boxer, an intimate film about the relationship of two married artists, Noriko and Ushio Shinohara. Here to tell us about the movie is the director, Zachary Heinzerling. Zachary, congratulations on your nomination and welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
So this film is a deceptively simple story about the long marriage of two artists. First, introduce us to them for those who haven't seen the film. Who are Ushio Shinohara and Noriko Shinohara as artists?
As artist, Ushio is probably the most well-known of the two. He became famous in the 1960s for being a part of a group called the Neo-Dada Organizers, which was a post-war avant-garde group that did a lot of performance art. And he sort of became most famous for his boxing paintings, which he started in the early 60s by basically just assaulting a canvas with paint-covered hands. And that sort of became what he was known for, and he moved to New York in the late 60s, part of a group of kind of expatriate Japanese artists living in Soho. He was sort of known as this infant terrible, the kind of downtown art scene partier, infamous for his drinking and sort of making a scene everywhere he went. And Noriko came in, when she was 19 years old, met Ushio, fell in love, was in art school, and had to sort of put her artistic aspirations on hold to become the wife and sort of caretaker for Ushio. So the film sort of picks up later in life. Ushio is now 80. Noriko is 60. And their son is now older, and Noriko really has a chance to grow as an artist and to sort of gain her independence from Ushio. And there's a sort of role reversal that happens over the course of the film where she starts to take power in the relationship. Ushio's struggling to sort of find his lasting legacy in a competitive New York art scene, and Noriko is really flourishing as an artist and doing a lot of the things that she wasn't able to while she was raising both her son and her other son, Ushio.
I mean, it's such an intimate portrait of the resentments that gather over the course of a long relationship about who's responsible for managing the household budget, who's responsible for bringing in money, who raises the children. And you see all of this not while it's happening, but after it's accumulated for decades over the course of their marriage. You start early on in the scene, there's a scene where Noriko and Ushio are sitting at the kitchen table, and Noriko is talking about the rent that has to be paid and the utilities that have to be paid, and Ushio is asking her how much money he needs to bring in. And you have another scene that's archival footage of Ushio shifting in a moment from sort of jocular drinking and partying with friends and talking about how the New York Times has called him wonderful as an artist, and then he just breaks down crying. You capture so beautifully the tensions and the pressures of being a working artist and the ways this husband and wife deal with it pretty differently.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a film about creative desire that's so strong that it hurts. And I think I'm fascinated by the kind of life of an artist, and especially with these two artists whose art is really their lives. I mean, with Ushio, his performance is his art. His body is his artwork. You have to see the way that he makes the art and every, blood, sweat, and tear that goes into it for it to be the sort of art that he wants you to see. And I think with Noriko, obviously her art is a product of her past, and they're very sort of opposite styles, but in the end, there's just this idea of kind of laying everything out and displaying yourself and all of your, you know, your wounds in an effort to really show something and show people something. And I mean, you know, that was me as the kind of observer was continually fascinated by the experience of seeing that and continually inspired to continue making the film, because it felt like we were all in process on something together, and there was no contentment among any of us. We were all continually working on something, you know, in whatever effort, you know, was necessary.
You capture, you said, the sort of Noriko in this transition in the way that she is, what she's willing to take from her husband Ushio, and how she talks about her art compared to his. At the beginning of the film, Ushio says of his wife, he says, quote, "She's just an assistant. The average one has to support the genius. That's what I think." And you capture, the documentary captures Noriko sort of increasingly rebelling against that attitude of his. And I wonder, you followed them for so many years. Do you think that having an observer for her made her more strident with him?
You know, I think my presence was sort of, you know, galvanizing a process that was already sort of well underway. I mean, you know, Noriko in a lot of ways commands power in the relationship from, you know, from day one. I mean, and you can feel the tension, and you can feel her sort of control in some ways over Ushio, and that was something that was sort of established from the day that I met them. I think with her artwork, you know, she was definitely encouraged to not only continue the cutie series, but to show it publicly, which is something she had, you know, really only done a few times.
And the Cutie series is animations of her, of a woman character named Cutie standing up to a male character named Bully. So it's playing out the history of their relationship.
Cutie is the sort of alter ego she's created for herself in the form of comics. And the story is this sort of playful yet, you know, ripe with tension display of the history of her marriage. But I think it's really, you know, my presence really just sort of allowed or pushed forward, you know, her own inclinations to show the work publicly and in a way that, you know, where she didn't really care what Ushio would think. I mean, she's basically displaying in these comics a very ugly side of her husband, you know, and a side that at some point in her life she probably would have been reticent to announce. And here she is sort of announcing to the world, and in sometimes in the same setting as her husband's art, you know, kind of what a terrible person he was when in the early years of their marriage. So I certainly think that, you know, my interest in the film was really both artists, but the story and the complexity and the heart of the film is really in Noriko's character. So as I continued to film and Noriko continued to open up for me and continued to sort of push forward with not only, you know, exposing the life of her and her husband, but talking about things that she hadn't really talked about, that became, you know, my focus of the movie. And as a result, I think, you know, the film ends with you sort of being in Noriko's corner, as I was in a way.
And also aware, though, of Ushio's vulnerabilities in a way that you aren't at the start of the film when he's, you know, making these bold statements about his wife's lack of talent compared to his. You see him as an aging male who needs his wife desperately.
Absolutely. I mean, he's a, you know, Ushio's character, he's sort of had the same spirit as you know, when he was born in some ways. He's an eternal kind of child, and there's a lovability to that, and there's a, you know, and there's almost sometimes there's a disgust to that. You think, you know, there's a purity to it, and there's something that I really find fascinating about the fact that he can sort of continue this life of a struggling artist. And And the questions of, to, you know, does he really believe you know, that success doesn't matter, or and finding kind of where it becomes a display of pride and you know, or whether he can expose some sort of regret. And I mean, the interesting thing about the footage that you mentioned earlier, you know, is that obviously I didn't shoot that footage. That was footage that we found. And even in the 5 years of me, you know, being in their house, living with them, I mean, there's a scene of me shooting Ushio when he goes and takes a shower. And that wasn't an abnormal scene. It was natural for me just to be there all of the time. But anyway, what's interesting is in those 5 years, I actually wasn't able to capture you know, a moment that kind of exposed his vulnerability in that kind of way, because he is this constant performance. And in some ways he is acting even when the camera, I mean, acting with or without the mm-hmm. camera, because that's sort of who he is. And Noriko will comment that he's sort of always this facade. And so getting a moment of him really where he's in a less inhibited state and talking about how painful it is, but simultaneously how beautiful it is, you know, it was incredibly important, obviously, to the film, and really, really changed, you know, the way that his character comes off. Because it's at times really hard to find any reason to kind of be sympathetic to his, you know, to sort of the sacrifices he's decided to make in the pursuit of being an artist.
So the Shinohara's left Soho for Dumbo, and that's where most of the film takes place, right there in their apartment and in their studio space. I have to ask, I mean, it's sort of a crass question, but their struggles with money and is such a kind of constant drama in the documentary. How have they been able to stay in Dumbo, the site of now multi-million dollar apartments?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, they're kind of the last of a dying breed. You know, I mean, they moved to Soho they moved to Dumbo in the 80s. You know, when it was pretty desolate, and they found this space, and they have an interesting relationship with their landlord. You know, if you see the film, and the space is, you know, there's holes in the ceilings. It's sort of in a state of disarray, but I think that's a result of you know, the landlord really sort of allowing them to stay and also agreeing kind of not to basically demolish the building and put up a high rise, is what they're doing in every building that surrounds them. So they've somehow gotten lucky, I think, that this building that they're in has sort of stayed in this state. There's still actually a sign that's fading away on the outside that says Artist's Loft, which is something it would be very hard to find in Dumbo today.
In Dumbo these days. One of the other main characters in the documentary is alcohol. I mean, you show Ushio's struggling with alcohol as a younger man, which you know, lasted late into his life. He's not drinking when you start filming, as far as I can tell. But you also show their son Alex sneaking drinks from his parents' refrigerator. Tell me about alcohol in this family and how they talked about it.
It's interesting. I mean, it's very complicated, and I think the film really just scratches the surface. You know, I would say that Alex is—he's an incredibly brilliant artist. He's an incredibly complicated person, as everyone is. And I think in the film, I tried to limit his role to be sort of viewed in the context of his parents, and almost as an unfortunate sacrifice that happens when, you know, when artists decide to really dedicate, you know, their lives to something, and you know, there are people that are left. And I think with Alex, it was really hard to sort of make the decision that I was going to try to contextualize his alcoholism or contextualize who he was as an artist and sort of get inside of his art and you know, in the way that I was trying to do with Ushio and Noriko. So I sort of filmed a lot, developed a relationship with Alex, and then in the end decided really to just include a few select scenes. But, you know, the issue of alcohol, I think, is certainly different for Ushio than it was Alex. I mean, there's the obvious sort of nursing the kind of struggles that Ushio went through. But, you know, it was also, he was sort of known as this infamous partier, and he would invite, you know, all of these musicians and dancers and artists that were living in you know, Bohemian Soho in the 70s and sleeping on the floors of lofts and paying little to no rent to his sort of grand palace and have these epic parties. And I think he became known for that. In a way, his identity was almost shaped by his ability to
party
and entertain. I mean, he's an entertainer. He's an entertainer in every aspect in his artwork, and if you just meet him, he will immediately start trying to entertain you. There's definitely a difference to that kind of alcoholism than, you know, just to maybe others that are hinted at in the film, for sure.
Tell me about, you mentioned Ushio was an entertainer. I mean, now he's the star of an Oscar-nominated documentary. What has the family's reaction been as the film, for example, was first released and then its Oscar nomination? Tell me about what your conversations have been like of late.
It's been really, really amazing. I mean, certainly, you know, when you're making a film about what I would consider underappreciated artists, you know, we're really bringing their story, not only their artwork, but their story. And I think this story is something, you know, that inspires. And I think, you know, people are getting a chance to see their artwork. They're also getting a chance to learn about the unconventional lives of artists. And it's been really amazing to see that this sort of smaller, more personal film can really resonate with a wider audience. And people have been kind of, you know, discovering in their own way the Shinoharas in the way that the film kind of tries to discover them. I mean, it's really an underdog story. It's really a discovery, you know, of you know, that they're relatively unknown artists. I'm, you know, a first-time director. I think when people see the film, it's like, you know, they're uncovering some, you know, something, and part of that process is also included in sort of what I'm talking about. But I think it's been great, you know, for a number of reasons. I think for Noriko particularly, you know, she's really taken ownership over this film, and you know, every Q&A we have, she talks more and more and more, and Ushio talks less and less, and they have this kind of battle on stage, which is, you know, perfect and indicative of what you've seen in the film. But yeah. But she is really, you know, like I said, taking ownership of the film and is kind of utilizing it to really show her story and to kind of show her story to women all over. I mean, she's getting tons and tons and tons of love and support from lots of groups and from not only from artists but anyone that can kind of relate to her story. So it's been really great for Noriko.
And what are your plans for Oscar night?
Well, it's interesting. Ushio actually, in you know, he grew up relatively poor in Tokyo, and the first big work that he sold, I think in maybe 1961, he went out and bought a tuxedo. he decided that he wanted to look good for his first show. So that tuxedo, which is over 50 years old, is still fits him today, and he's going to be wearing that on the red carpet, which I'm excited by. And Noriko will be there as well. I'm excited by the you know, the idea of them sort of being out there among all of these stars. I mean, it's kind of a surreal image in my head and nothing that any of us would have expected, but...
Well, congratulations, Zachary Heinzerling, first-time filmmaker, director of Cutie and the Boxer, a documentary about Brooklynites Ushio and Noriko Shinohara. Congratulations on the nomination. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.